Right now, we're talking about the lives of sex offenders in Wisconsin. A recent study found Wisconsin ranks sixth for the most registered sex offenders per capita of any state. The analysis by the site safehome.org used 2019 data from federal and state sources. Has a sex offender recently moved into your neighborhood? Are you concerned or do you feel just as safe? What do you want to know about the supervised release program? We're at 800-642-1234 to join in. Alicia Burma is the Supervised Release Program Section Chief with the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Alicia, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you work closely with convicted sex offenders and this program. What is it like to be a registered sex offender right now in Wisconsin?
So there are about 26 to 27,000 registered sex offenders in the state of Wisconsin. The supervised release program is a program for individuals who are specifically civilly committed to the Department of Health Services, and those are about 63 individuals in the program currently.
So for those individuals in the program, what is their life like, and how much interaction do you have with them through the program?
So the program has assists the individual in reintegrating into the community. So we have close contact with individuals in the program. Individuals in our program are closely monitored. They have case managers who visit them. They're required to see their DOC agents every week, and they receive specific treatment for sex offender treatment to assist them in the reintegration into the community.
Are they living in a group setting or on their own? What are their living arrangements?
Yep, most individuals are living in their own residence that's leased by the Department of Health Services. Some have a roommate in the program. Others live by themselves. And if individuals need additional assistance, they might be placed in a group home.
You've attended community meetings all over the state when a certain individual is released in the area that who has committed a sex-related crime. What concerns do you hear from members of the community?
We hear a lot of concerns about knowing that there is someone who's placed near them or next to them. That creates a lot of fear for individuals who live in that area. What's interesting, though, however, is that the fact that we know that an individual is there, they're actually safer because they know where the individual is. Individuals in the supervised release program are closely monitored. Most individuals who commit sex offenses are actually individuals who know that person personally. And so folks in our program, we really try and focus on the reintegration piece. We try to ensure that an individual gets a job and is living healthily in the community. That is the goal of our program.
So when you say closely monitored, do you mean daily contact with the person, weekly, monthly? What is that like?
Yeah, so when a person first comes out statutorily on our program, they're monitored one-on-one with an individual who takes them to where they need to go and is in sight, sound, and physical access of that individual. So they're actually transported where they need to go, and they're closely monitored. We also monitor individuals by doing random checks on the home. So day or night, we might go into their residence and check to make sure that that they're doing what they need to do and that they're not violating any of the rules of the program. In addition, they have GPS. So an active GPS is run through the Department of Corrections, and there's a 24/7 monitoring center which knows what the person's schedule is. So this person is required to be in their residence unless they have a specific reason to be out of their residence, and then they're actively monitored by the GPS who tracks where they are.
So if you're a concerned citizen, do you have any ability to stop an individual from being relocated into your community or into your neighborhood, perhaps?
So it's interesting, in this program, everyone is court-ordered into the program. So it's a judge that makes a decision about someone coming out into the program. The responsibility of the Department of Health Services then is to to do the best job to rehabilitate and reintegrate that individual into the community. So the point of contact for individuals really is through the judge, because the judge is the one that makes the decision in all matters around our program.
And before that judge, you know, or before that you get them in your program, they have lived at the Sand Ridge Secure Treatment Center near Wisconsin Dells, is that right?
Yes. Yeah, so there is, when an individual commits a sex-related crime, typically they go to prison or another institution. Before a person is released, if they've committed certain types of sexual-related crimes, then the district attorney or the Department of Justice files a petition alleging that the person completing their prison sentence meets criteria under Chapter 980. So Chapter 980 is the law which governs the civil commitment process. Then what happens is there is a probable cause hearing to determine if the individual meets the criteria under Chapter 980. And if so, then the court looks at that and determines whether or not an individual is civilly committed to the Department of Health Services under Chapter 980. From there, an individual leaves that institution and goes directly to Sand Ridge Secure Treatment Center, which is an inpatient treatment facility that specifically treats individuals who are committed under Chapter 980. From that point, an individual can petition to come out on supervised release or to be discharged annually, and a judge decides whether or not they stay in the institution, whether or not they can be directly discharged into the community, or whether or not they can continue a civil commitment on a supervised release program, which is the program that we're talking about today.
We're talking with Alicia Burma, the Supervised Release Program Section Chief with the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Your thoughts, your questions. What do you want to know about this program? What questions do you have? Are you a mental health professional who treats sex offenders? What do we tend to misunderstand about these individuals? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Alicia, currently there are approximately 24 men waiting to be transferred out of Sand Ridge Secure Treatment Center. Is that number pretty typical?
So, you know, it's interesting. A couple of years ago, Act 184 was passed. It went into effect on March 30th, 2018. Prior to that time, it took a number of days for an individual to come out on supervised release and to find a residence for that individual. In fact, it could take 500 days for an individual to be finally placed. Since the passage of Act 184, counties now are responsible for creating a temporary committee, and that committee searches for residents in that county. And we've seen a lot more successful placements since then. So the flow of individuals out on our program has increased, which is a very positive development.
How does the committee then decide where to place the individual?
So there's statutory criteria around where an individual can live, and it's the individual committee responsibility to look at what whether or not a residence meets that criteria. So an individual is not allowed to live less than 1,500 feet from a school, from a daycare, from a church, from a park. And so the committee is responsible for really looking at what residents might meet criteria and finding a residence that meets that criteria, for which then the Department of Health Services is responsible for submitting that recommendation to the court.
There are websites that show you where a convicted sex offender lives. How does this ability to locate these individuals perhaps inform our biases about them?
Yeah, well, I mean, individuals who have committed sexual crimes are one of the most stigmatized groups in society. But these websites which show where individuals live is really a tool for the community to be better informed. And the goal is to create a safer community. So by knowing where individuals live, the community can be better informed.
So you are very much in favor of this type of transparency.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we've found, and there was research that was done of individuals out on the supervised release program where they were asked whether or not, as clients, they approved of these websites which inform the community where individuals live. And there was a mixed response. But overall, they felt that it was helpful for individuals to know where they lived. We do want to make sure, however, that individuals are not targeted by the community based on the fact that they've had previous sex offenses. And that is a concern that we have in our program for individuals who are placed.
What might it look like for someone to be targeted?
We've had situations in our program where actually a neighbor tried to burn down a residence where an individual was living. We've had neighbors harass individuals in our program. So by knowing that an individual is living where they're living, they have been targeted. And our goal is to safely reintegrate the individual in the community here in the supervised release program. And so we really want to make sure that we're creating a safe environment for individuals to do that, because we know from research that safe reintegration decreases the number of sexual reoffenses. And that's really our goal in the supervised release program.
We're talking with Alicia Berman, the supervised release program section chief with the Department of Health Services. What do you think about Governor Evers choosing to not change sex offender residency requirements? Do you feel safer knowing offenders live at least 1,500 feet away from schools? Are you a judge? How do you decide which sex offenders should be released to the community? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about where registered sex offenders go after being released from prison or from a mandated treatment program. A state law, as we've been talking about, bars sexually violent people from living less than 1,500 feet from schools, public parks, places of worship, or youth centers. Are you a mental health professional who works with sex offenders? What do we tend to misunderstand? Are you a registered sex offender? What would you say about your release and how your life is today? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Alicia Berman is the Supervised Release Program Section Chief with the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, and she stays with us. Let's take a call now. Let's go to John, who joins us from Appleton. Hi, John.
Hi. Just have a couple of questions. The first relates to the location of their placement and how close to a police office or a police presence do they need to be housed? The second question is the cost of their housing. I've heard that we pay more than fair market value. So how much do we pay for their rent? And if it's more than fair market value, why is it that price?
John, thanks for those questions. Alicia, can you tackle the police station question first?
Sure. Thank you very much. These are great questions. So there's nothing statutorily that requires that an individual be placed near to a police station. That said, that might be a very good place for an individual to be placed. So while the legislators have not reflected that in statutes, that doesn't mean that a county committee who's looking for a residence for the individual can't take those kinds of safety and protective factors in account when finding a location for an individual to reside.
And then the second question there about cost, Alicia?
Yeah, so in our program, and again, we're talking about a small number of sex offenders. Again, there's about 26 to 27,000 registered sex offenders in the state of Wisconsin, and our program has 63 individuals currently. We do pay above fair market rent for leases. It is very difficult to find landlords who are willing to lease to the Department of Health Services for the purpose of placing a client into that residence. And so we have paid more for residences. And also, landlords are taking on an increased risk because of the community reaction. So I can't underscore enough the community reaction in some areas and how that has impacted both clients and landlords. We look at what is commercially reasonable first. So when we're negotiating a lease, we do look at what is fair market value in that area, and that's the starting point for which we begin to negotiate with that particular landlord.
We're talking with Alicia Berman, the Supervised Release Program Section Chief at the Department of Health Services, and looking at registered sex offenders and their lives after treatment programs. Let's go to Mark now in Green Bay. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, how you doing? Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So my question for the guest is, I wonder if she could discuss, recidivism rates of the offenders that are committed to her program in particular, and just a follow-up question of whether or not there's any kind of like lie detector monitoring of these offenders. I know some states do that with their programs.
Mark, thanks for the question. Alicia, how often do you see sex offenders that are part of this program reoffend?
Yep. So that's a perfect question. I'm so glad it was asked. In our program, the reason why it's so successful is because of the low recidivism rate for individuals in our program, which is less than 2%. So our program has been in existence since 1994, and there has been less than 2% of individuals in the program who have committed and been convicted of sex-related crimes.
Why do you think that is?
It's really because of the wraparound approach. We've got a full-team approach that monitors and works with the individual to make sure that they're reintegrating successfully. We have a lot of tools in our toolbox to be able to ensure that a person is doing well. And if they're not doing well, we have the ability to make changes to their treatment, to their supervision, to the rules that they have. If somebody's not doing well, they might go back to the institution for a little bit just to work on a few issues before coming out. And we also have the ability to ask the court to revoke a person's civil commitment on supervised release and return them back to Sandridge Secure Treatment Center.
Offenders can also hold down jobs, be employed. How difficult is it for them to find a job and have a steady source of income?
You know, there are many barriers. Again, this is a highly stigmatized group. There are many big barriers to finding employment. However, we found in this job market that people are being very successful in finding employment. And this is a very positive thing because we know that it's a protective factor. So individuals who are working, individuals who are connected to the community, individuals who have these wraparound services, this all speaks to having a more successful outcome for the clients in our program.
When you look at the types of jobs that your clients are getting, what might they be?
Yep. So we approve all employment for clients in our program, in the supervised release program. We do this because we do not allow individuals to work in places that where there are children, for example. A lot of the work that they do are in factories or working cleaning in the evenings, office buildings. So there's quite a few jobs that individuals are approved to do, and we make sure that they're safe.
When do individuals graduate or leave the program? What is that like?
That's an excellent question. So the only way into the program is by court order. So a judge has to look at how the individual is doing. There are psychologists that are hired through the Department of Health Services who evaluate a person's risk, evaluate how they're doing. To come into supervised release, that's a court-ordered process. And again, to leave the program, that's also a court-ordered process. So our program does not invite people into the program or discharge people out of the program. That's all through the court system.
Mark in Green Bay had also asked about the use of lie detectors. Are they being used at all?
Absolutely. In our program, we do have a polygraph. Individuals are required to take them periodically, and we ask questions about whether or not individuals are following rules, whether or not they're engaging in any behaviors that are risky to the community, and we do look at how a person is doing and how they respond to those polygraphs.
Alicia, there can be this perception that a person can't be rehabilitated. Is there something faulty to that thinking?
There is. We have seen a lot of successes on our program. Individuals who leave the program who are leading healthy lives, who have gotten the treatment that they need in order to move forward and be productive members of society, to have stable jobs and to be able to contribute to the community in positive ways. And that really is the goal of the supervised release program and one of the successes. We found that individuals who are a part of our program have much better outcomes than individuals who are directly released from prison or directly released from Sandridge. And that's why this program is so important for the community at large.
In the last moments we have with you, as section chief, what are your greatest challenges? What do you grapple with?
So I think, again, you know, educating the community. There are we participate in community notification meetings, which I find very helpful. Oftentimes in these meetings, people come up to me afterwards and thank us for coming out and really educating people on the program, educating people around how we ensure the safety of the community. So while they might not be pleased that someone's coming out in their community, they feel that the knowledge that they gain from these community notifications are very helpful.
Alicia, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Alicia Burma is the Supervised Release Program Section Chief with the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Just ahead, it's the growing issues surrounding noise pollution. We look at the latest research on environmental noise and how it affects the health and well-being of our communities. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.